At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB podcast. I'm Connor Rohr and we got Albert Breer back for another episode. Albert is on his way, or soon will be on his way, to the owners' meetings. A lot of cool stuff happening there, but we wanted to get the best of free agency, part one, wave one, phase one, whatever you want to call it, down and buttoned up before we allow him to get back on a plane. Albert, how does it feel to be on your way again? We just got done with the Super Bowl, and now you're turning around and you're going right back.
It feels like the season never ended. I mean, like, this is, like, honestly, like, probably as quiet as it's been, and that we're through the first wave of free agency. And it felt like the Super Bowl flowed right into the combine, flowed right into free agency. And, like, this is quiet right now, but, like, there's still, like, the Aaron Rodgers bomb to drop, and there's still the Lamar Jackson bomb to drop. And it's going to be it's just going to be strange, I think, like, going to the owners' meetings next week. They start Sunday in Phoenix. And knowing that, like, these things are sort of hanging over your head. You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of times you go to that and, like, most of the offseason news is buttoned up and it's not quite draft time yet. But, yeah, I mean, those are two pretty big names, Connor, that are, like, just hanging around out there. So we'll see what happens.
I was going to say, I mean, last year there was that kind of that specter of Deshaun Watson hanging over everything. But this year it's legitimately Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, a possible sale of the Commanders, which we'll get all this stuff we'll get to today. Mm-hmm. It's like, holy smokes. I mean, this, you know, for two people who value their July not doing anything, that it sounds like less and less possible that's going to happen.
Well,
this
hopefully
year.
Nobody blows their hand off with fireworks in July.
So there you go.
You might have been on the Giants beat for that one. Were you?
Oh, gosh. What year was that?
I can't remember.
I think I had just left. I had just gone to NFL Network. Okay. Speaking of which, is the owners' meetings at the Biltmore again this year?
Yes, it is.
Oh, man. So I don't know if you – I don't know.
I'm
if,
not staying there, though, just to clarify. I'm down the street roughing it at the Camby.
Did you ever stay there when you worked for the NFL?
That was, like, one of the best benefits of
God, it was awesome.
Yeah. I stayed at the Breakers 1 year, which was incredible. Like, it was yeah. I mean, having access to the spa and all of that different stuff too, you know?
Let me give people sort of a behind the scenes, like, you know, again, I'm very, very happy at Sports Illustrated. I wanted to come to Sports Illustrated, but so when you're working for the league, you get to, if at the league meetings, you get to stay at the Biltmore, which is, like, one of the nicest hotels in the country in Phoenix. And you're treated like a guest of the NFL. And so the year that I went, you walk into the Biltmore, right? And then your name is on all these lists. And so you walk into this room that's just full of free stuff. Yeah. And someone goes, "Oh, Connor, over here. What size?" And you're like, "Oh, I'm a large." Okay. And then out comes a Nike duffel bag, brand new, two pairs of brand new Nike running shoes, Nike shorts, Nike pullover, all this stuff. And then you go over to the North Face table. Here's a North Face book bag. Here's a button-down shirt. Here's pants. Here's all this stuff. And then you go over to this. And I had to buy, like, extra stuff from the airport to get that all home.
Right. And so to give people an idea of what this looks like too, like, a lot, most times, like, whether it's the Biltmore, the Breakers, there's, like, a Ritz in Orlando that they've had it at a couple times. There's usually, like, a FedEx window at these resorts. And on the last day of the owners meetings, there'll be this long line at the FedEx window of, like, head coaches and general, like, a who's who in the NFL all lined up at this FedEx window to ship all their free stuff home.
It's amazing. And then at the Biltmore, right, I took all my stuff up there because at that point, I mean, I was still very young. I wasn't making a lot of money, and this was more than I'd ever had in possession of that I was ever in possession of in my entire life. And then I get up to my room at the Biltmore, I open the sliding glass door, and I go out there and I just sit there for a minute, and then just a wild parrot, like, you know, because it's you're just in this paradise, and this parrot just comes up on my balcony. Yeah. Like, I don't know what they paid for these parrots.
It's weird that doesn't happen at the courtyard.
That's it's a little bit less like that at the Mount Laurel Residence Inn.
And it's it's funny too, because they don't, like, you don't get any warnings the first time. Like, I went to NFL Network in 2010, and so they didn't have owners meetings that first year. But they had like a scaled down one at like the, it was a really nice hotel, the Roosevelt, I think, in New Orleans, I think was the name of it, something like that. And it's always funny, like the first, like, cause they don't give you any warning that all that stuff's coming. And then you show up and you think, oh yeah, like they're going to like have me in a storage closet or something. Nope. They treat you like everybody else. And it's like, you're just, they're lavishing you with free stuff. And yeah. Yeah. I will not be getting those amenities in 2023.
Last story about that. So I was wearing something that I got from there when I was working at NFL Network, and I was walking down the row of TVs that we had at the old office. So I was wearing like a Nike pullover that I got for free. And then they were broadcasting a Sean Payton press conference, and he was wearing the exact same Nike pullover that we'd both gotten at the Biltmore. And then everyone just told me to stop in the newsroom and turn around, and everyone took my picture next to it because we were wearing the same free stuff. So everyone loves free stuff, even if you're shopping.
Doesn't matter how much money you make. You know, everybody loves free stuff.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump in here to the best of free agency wave one. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about this a little bit before we got going. I know some of yours. I'm going to surprise you maybe with some of mine. But again, general thoughts here. I don't think this was bonkers by any stretch. Yeah. This wasn't – last year there was a lot of trade and signs, and so it artificially inflated a lot of the values of these contracts. I want to say only the guard in Atlanta did a market-topping deal. I think that was the only market-topping contract.
I guess – yeah, Hargrave was like a little down the line. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think, like, the right tackles, obviously those are good right tackle deals, right? Like, but like, I think, like, if you consider Jawan Taylor a right tackle, even though he's going to play left for Kansas City, like, because his experience has been at right tackle, like that would probably be the best ever for a right tackle, maybe, right?
It could be a market topping, although I can't remember the numbers on Lane off the top of my head.
Right. So, But I think it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's a result of two things, Connor. I think number one, the free agent class kind of sucked. And I think that happened for two reasons. Number one, I think because the NFL has become more trade happy, teams aren't letting guys get to the end of their contracts if they know they're not going to be able to re-sign them. So you're seeing like AJ Brown get traded a year ahead of time, right? So I think that's one part of it. The second part of it is like, because there's more cap space across the NFL, you just have you have teams more able to sign the guys they want to sign. So those guys aren't making it to the market either. So like, I think that's one piece of it. And then I think the second piece of it is just that I think teams have gotten smarter about not spending great for good, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, where, like, let's not break the bank for a guy who may be a really good player, but isn't a top tier player. Right. And so like, when the top tier guys become available, spend on them. No one's ever going to apologize for paying, you know, like what the Niners are going to give Nick Bosa or what the Rams gave Jalen Ramsey a few years ago. No one's ever going to apologize for those sorts of deals. What the Dolphins gave Tyreek Hill. But don't spend great money on just good players. And I think that's really affected the free agent market too, where teams are maybe showing a little bit more restraint. And, you know, I think that's probably a result too, I would think, Connor, of like analytics, right? Like, in
sure.
Teams are probably better able to value players and what they're really worth.
Yeah, just to clean that up. So Jawan Taylor, if you would have considered him a pure right tackle, would have topped the right tackle market at $20 million per year. Mm-hmm. Just edging Ryan Ramczyk was 19.2, and then you had Lane Johnson, Taylor Moten, Mike McGlinchey at 17.5. But if you throw him into the pool at left tackle, since he's going to be taking left tackle, I mean, no one's touching that. Well, the Laremy Tunsil deal was just incredible for him. Yeah, I know you wrote a little bit about
that. Laramie Tunsil's a king of NFL business. I mean, after you think back, Connor, to like how the gas mask video cost him about $8 million, right? And like since then, the guy has like built leverage and maximized leverage and done short-term deals. And like Laramie Tunsil's a very, I'd say Laramie Tunsil's a very solid example of how NFL players should look at contracts and how they should handle their negotiations.
And he's going to be able to, I mean, you know, I had one agent tell me, right, you always want to come up again before you turn 30. I don't think it'll quite be that close. Laramie Tunsil's in his age 28 season. It's a 3-year deal, but you know, you could probably try to renegotiate at the end of year two, right before you turn 30, and just pop it again, you know, and good for him. Like you said, it's now everything.
I mean, that's like one thing, like I think fans can like understand, like when you hear, like, this isn't baseball. Like when you hear a guy's doing a 5 or 6 year deal, that's good for the team, not the player, right, in almost all cases. Now, Deshaun Watson's an outlier, but in most cases, if a team's getting a 5 or 6 year deal on a player, probably at least 2 or 3 and probably 3 or 4 of those years are simply team options, glorified team options. So that's the shorter deals is almost always the better deal for the player.
And everything that was in that gas mask is legal now. So leave Laramie.
Isn't that wild how like different, like it's like gambling and marijuana are the two things that are like viewed like 180 different from where they were 10 years ago.
Now the NFL's selling it to us.
I mean, I guess this means kids don't have to go a mile out into the woods anymore.
But you miss some of that. You miss the connection with nature. That's what.
Yeah, you miss the you miss the rush of like, is that a cop over there? So yeah,
dousing yourself in Axe body spray and pretending that you don't smell like weed.
Right. Or go or in college, going and meeting some bookie in a shady location.
All right. So favorite signing of wave one, and I guess I'll start, but the actual contract has not been signed yet. So I'll add a disclaimer there and then I'll give you a second one. But I love the Marcus Davenport deal. As it's been reported, it's 1 year and $13 million. He has not signed that. And we're recording this at about 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning. So I don't know if there's something that's holding that up right now, but I love that for the player. And I love it for the Vikings because the Vikings are going to get incredible double digit sack production out of that. He's going to play the Za'Darius Smith role. And then Davenport's going to be able to get up again and really cash in, I think, and get a deal that takes him through his 30s if he stays healthy and he has a good year.
Yeah, and I think it's like an overall effort like by Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell to get younger. You know, like I think they like the group of players they had. And I remember talking to those guys last summer about it, like there's a good foundation here and the culture is really good. And, you know, like they had guys who'd been there forever, like Eric Kendricks, like Danelle Hunter, like Harrison Smith, like Adam Thielen. And I think that they felt like it was important for them to carry over some things from the previous regime. And I think that like phase two of what they're doing is really smart, is to get younger. You know, like they felt like, okay, like now we've sort of established ourselves. So now we have to find a way to get younger across the board and have more ascending players here. So I think it's smart for the Vikings from that standpoint too, and that they're bringing in a younger guy who, I mean, who knows? Maybe he really likes it there and he winds up being there long term. But at the very least, they're going to get an incredibly motivated guy who plays a premium position because, I mean, Marcus Davenport has everything in the world to play for right now.
Exactly. If I had to pick a backup, by the way, Samaje Perine, but anyone that signed Samaje Perine was going to get my best deal because Samaje Perine is just my favorite player in the NFL. But they got him for like $3 million a year, and he was a house in Cincinnati, caught a lot of balls, was great at the goal line. You know, he might be able to bail Russell Wilson out a couple times.
He's had such an interesting like story, too. He was such a productive college player and such a fun player to watch at Oklahoma. And it, like running back, you usually hit the ground running, and it actually took him a while to get his footing as an NFL player. So he's been an interesting story. I'll give you my two. And I'd start, and this is going to be a sexy one, but Isaac Suamoa, who is the guard from Philadelphia. I thought it was confusing why he sat on the market for as long as he did. I think they got him for about $9 million in Pittsburgh. And there are a couple things that I really like about this. Number one, he's coming from Jeff Stoutland. And I think like a lot of times it's a good bet to go in on a lineman who's had an incredible offensive line coach. And over the years, like Dante Scarnecchia, Bill Callahan, like those sorts of guys. So I think it's always like, if you're going to sign an offensive lineman in free agency, like getting a guy from one of those like really, really high-end line coaches is putting it in the middle of the fairway. Like, you know, you're going to get a guy who's going to come in and be able to hit the ground running. And then the second part of it is like, that I really like, is that it's Andy Weidel signing him. You know, Andy Weidel, for those who don't know, was the VP of player personnel in Philly, is now the assistant GM in Pittsburgh. And I always think, like, you know, it's like, you see Rand Carthon doing some of this in Tennessee now, right? Like, I think it's always interesting seeing how a guy uses his institutional knowledge. And when you have one of these guys who've been in the building who are somewhere else, like, who do they not go in on and who do they go in on, you know? And so I always think, like, in those sorts of situations, when you're bringing in somebody that you have that sort of institutional knowledge on, it usually says something. So that's one I liked. And then the other one was the one-year deal that Devin Bush did in Seattle. Look, he's hurt a lot in Pittsburgh. But I still think there's a lot of potential there. And I think like that the fit in Seattle's system might be a little bit better than the fit was in Pittsburgh. And going from, you know, Pete Carroll, going from, you know, Mike Tomlin's 3-4 to Pete Carroll's 4-3, I think they'll get him running and playing in space a little bit more. And like, there's going to be opportunity there because Cody Barton's gone. So I do like the idea of Devin Bush, kind of like along the same lines as you were saying with Davenport, like a former first round pick, top half of the first round, a guy who's got great athletic traits, who, you know, who's going to a place motivated to sort of restart his career a little bit.
Yeah, Seattle's had a nice offseason. They spent a little uncharacteristically, which I thought was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And they sort of they went top of market a little bit with Draymond Jones, too. So I like the fact that they see themselves as both a team that's playing for the future and playing for now. I mean, you'll have Geno Smith. They might draft a guy depending on how the draft shakes out, and or they might have someone in kind of the developmental pipeline. So I mean, they're in a phenomenal
here's the way I look at them, Connor, is like they're in this phenomenal spot where, like, with the fifth pick they could wind up with Jalen Carter or Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson, or like they're also well positioned to take Anthony Richardson, you know, if they want to, because like everybody says he's going to need time, he's going to need to. Well, you know, you've got Geno Smith there for the next couple of years, you know, so you've got your place that's got the leeway to sit a quarterback for a year or two if that's what he needs.
So Anthony Richardson is like, and, you know, he might not need as much help as everybody thinks he might, and or he does. I don't know. But what I would do if I was Seattle or someone like that, like he's working with the same coaches who I wrote about with Brock Purdy that helped him kind of change his mechanics and his motion and turn that around. Same guys that work with Caleb Williams at USC, a couple of these top-tier quarterbacks. I know the Jets got a lot of flack for doing this with Zach Wilson, but it's almost like hire his quarterback coach for a year, bring that guy in, and let them just do skills and drills, board work, skills and drills, like all private stuff all year that first year. Like, make it a graduate level education in the NFL, have everybody in the same building, and then by the end of year one, you're ready to compete with Geno Smith and see what happens in the preseason. But tell him, like, no pressure starting. I mean, this guy's bigger than Derrick Henry. He's faster than Derrick Henry. It's nuts.
I heard, you know what's interesting that I heard from a couple teams on him? There are teams that think he doesn't have to sit, that he has to play.
Yeah.
And I thought this was really interesting. It was, the idea was like, so like there are guys who need to sit because like you don't want them to have to learn at full speed. Like, and you want to, like, there might be something mechanically you want to do or whatever, and you don't want them to get like screwed up fundamentally. So you want them to sit, right? I've heard with Anthony Richardson, it's the opposite, in that he, like, if you look at his reps in college, they're so much lower than everybody else's that's gone in the first round at quarterback. And I think you did something on Brock Purdy, right? Like, where the amount of throws he had, like, Anthony Richardson had less than 400 attempts at Florida, which is a really, really low number for a quarterback coming into the draft. And so, like, I had a couple teams say to me, like, we don't think he needs to sit. We think he needs to play because he just hasn't seen anything. And so, like, the thing about drafting him high is like you might almost have to throw a year overboard, you know what I mean? And say, you know what, like we're going to live with the bumps. And this might look really ugly at times, but we just think that he needs to see stuff, you know? And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it, in that like you don't really think of a guy who's raw that way much, but like Mahomes was raw coming into the NFL, but he'd seen plenty. He'd thrown the ball, I think, over 1,000 times, right, you know, at Texas Tech. But like, it's sort of the opposite is true with Richardson, where he just hasn't seen enough.
That's true. All right, give me your least favorite signing of free agency.
I'd be a little concerned about Mike McGlinchey. And it's not that I think he's a terrible player. I don't. You spent a lot on him. $20 million in year one, $35 million over the first two. And you're basically paying him like he's going to come in there and be Lane Johnson at right mm-hmm. tackle for you, right? So I think we'd both agree the Niners are a smart organization, right?
Definitely.
Why'd they take his money and spend it on Javon Hargrave?
Right.
I mean, yep. Like, seriously, like, you could sit here before free agency and say, maybe you'd say like, oh, like the Niners can't afford to keep him. The Niners have to pay Nick Bosa. They've paid Fred Warner. They've paid Trent Williams. They've paid Deebo Samuel. They just don't have space to do it. They acquired Christian McCaffrey, but they'd spend on Javon Hargrave. Right. So like, what are the Niners telling you there? Like, I think that that's sort of the disconnect. It's like the Niners are telling you that they didn't really value McGlinchey. And now another team's paying him as if he's going to come in there and, again, be like your Lane Johnson at right tackle. And so I like that the Broncos invested on the offensive line. And if you look at Sean Payton's history with the Saints, almost like uniformly until the very end when they paid Mike Thomas and Alvin Kamara, they didn't pay skill position players. They always paid linemen. So this has always been sort of his model. I just, like, I wonder a little bit based on the Niners' actions whether or not that was money well spent on McGlinchey.
It's a good point. I'm going to go over in Philly, and I just think the Eagles are so ahead of the curve constantly on when to move on from people, especially quarterbacks and coaches, but other players too. And it felt like the run it back mentality this year. And I guess, you know, you would do that no matter what if you were a mm-hmm. GM, but it seems like they focus so much on re-signing, you know, a 32-year-old Darius Slay, 35-year-old Fletcher Cox, 34-year-old Fletcher Cox, 36-year-old Brandon Graham, you know, 37-year-old Jason Kelce, 36, I think. And I'm not saying it can't be good, but you also have to understand how incredibly fortunate you were to have those guys for as long as you were. And yes, they're huge from a culture standpoint. And I know that's part of Jeffrey Lurie's thing, right? You want, in between regimes, you want to carry over that culture and that expectation. These are all guys that I could see working for the Eagles when they're done playing, without a doubt. But did you want to make the sole focus of your offseason, not sole, but primary focus of your offseason, spending short-term top dollar on guys like this when Jalen Hurts took a big step in the leadership department last year? And right. I think that this was the offseason to kind of hand off some of that and put some of that onto his plate.
I'll be interested to see what happens like once they get Hurts signed and what this looks like. Because this year they'll manage I'm sure they'll do a deal that has a massive signing bonus that keeps his number manageable this year. Like, what I'm interested in is what this is going to look like next year. And like you said, was this the time to sort of turn the page? And you saw that in a couple spots. Like, I do think one of the things that Howie is best at is drafting a year ahead, right? Like, yep. So they let Javon Hargrave go. They drafted Jordan Davis in the first round last year. They let TJ Edwards go. They drafted N'Kobe Dean in the top 100 last year. So you see like where they had some guys ready to roll. And even like, you know, Cam Jurgens, I think, is ready to be their starting center if they were willing or ready to move on from Jason Kelce. So I think what you want to look at with the Eagles is you mentioned all those guys. You mentioned the Slays, the Coxes, the Brandon Grahams, the Jason Kelces, even Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson's older now. Are they going to spend their draft capital this year? Because remember, they have a top 10 pick. They have two first rounders. Are they going to spend their draft capital this year to work a year ahead on replacing some of those guys? And are we going to be able to see them telegraphing the end for some of those older guys? I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, because I think that would make what you're talking about a little bit more understandable.
Yeah. So overall, which team do you think had the best performance? To me, it's a tie. I like what the Bears did, and I'll fight anyone that says it was a bad idea to sign two off-ball linebackers, because I think that Ryan Poles was smart not digging in. Like, you needed defensive tackles. I know that. And Bears fans, I hear you. But you're going to pay $22 million for a 30-year-old in this market, at the top of the market, or you're going to get a 25, 26-year-old inside linebacker who, in Matt Eberflus's defense, can probably do just as much damage, because he mixes up his front seven so well, at, you know, two-thirds of that cost. The guy's 5 years younger. I loved what they did. I thought they had a great... And then to get DJ Moore in there to bolster the confidence of Justin Fields by, you know, not dawdling with the first overall pick, trading it, you know, saying we're here. And, well, I'll pause here, because you had a good anecdote that you wrote about, and kind of that this has been in the works for Poles for a while in terms of making Justin Fields feel like part of the process.
Yeah, like last year he brought him in the draft room, and I think he knew that there was going to be a lot of buzz about, like, are you helping Justin? Are you not helping Justin? Are you in on Justin? Are you not in on Justin? And so he knew that was coming, and he anticipated it. And he said, why don't I bring Justin Fields into the draft room? And he brought him into the draft room, and he explained to him how his board works. And so when Justin Fields is sitting there on Thursday and Friday and Saturday of the draft, and the Bears, I believe, didn't have a first-round pick because they'd used it to trade for Fields the year before, right? So when he's sitting there on Friday night watching the draft and seeing who his team is taking, like, he has an understanding of why they're doing it, right? Like, and why we're not taking a receiver with one of our two first-round picks, and why we're not taking an offensive lineman with one of our two first-round picks. So I think that sort of set the stage for this year, where it could have been a real problem that he didn't just flat out say to Justin, you're our quarterback, we're trading the pick. Like, it gave him flexibility to be honest and open with Justin, because Justin trusts him now, you know? So I thought it was an interesting way to look at it. And, you know, Ryan told me, like, you know, it was really informed from his time with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and how open Andy Reid had been with Alex Smith about how much they liked Mahomes before they drafted him, and then how they let Mahomes in on some of the decisions that they made over the last few years.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I think we all wondered when they got the number one pick where this was going to go. And I think that he has come out of there as damage free as you possibly could have hoped for a GM in that spot. You know, Justin Fields doesn't feel chided. The team doesn't feel in the dark. The fan base isn't confused. And you're not doing what maybe John Gruden did a couple of years ago, right? Where you have Derek Carr sitting there and you're at Kyler Murray's pro day and you're not really communicating with anybody, you know, and making a guy feel a little bit left out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to sound like me taking a layup, but I do like what the Chiefs did. Like, I think, you know, like, the investment in protecting Patrick Mahomes and the investment, you're continuing to kind of pour resources back into it, and building yourself flexibility for the draft, right? Like, so they take Juwan Taylor, and the plan is to play him at left tackle. But what they're saying is we think he can play left tackle. We know he can play right tackle. And now with the 31st overall pick, if we take another tackle, which would further solidify what we've got in front of him for the next 5 years or so, well, now we don't have to focus on just finding a left tackle. So they built flexibility where it's like, you know, maybe they take the kid from Oklahoma, or they take DeJuan Jones from Ohio State, or Darnell Wright from Tennessee, who are right tackles by trade. And so I think, like, it's like another example of Brett Veach and Andy Reid looking at it and saying, let's just build ourselves flexibility going forward. And, you know, I just think you continue to see them looking at things and kind of like trying to solve problems creatively. And, you know, now, like, instead of being in the year-to-year situation with Orlando Brown, which they weren't getting Orlando Brown for the deal. I mean, people sometimes look at it and say, well, why didn't they just sign Orlando Brown? They weren't getting Orlando Brown for the deal that the Bengals got him for. There was too much water under the bridge. But they were able to think creatively here, look at it creatively, and solve a problem that way. I think was really, really impressive. And it puts them in a position of strength going into the draft now, where we saw how well they drafted last year. 9 of the 10 guys they drafted were active for all three playoff games, which is wild. Like, stuff like that generally doesn't happen. They've really positioned themselves where they're going to have some options in the draft to continue to invest in what's around their young quarterback. The other three teams that I just think this is worth watching. Okay. I think in an environment where Daniel Jones got $40 million a year, Derek Carr got, you know, depending on how you look at it, $30-35 million a year, and Jimmy Garoppolo even got, you know, almost $25 million a year. Like, I think you're seeing like some pushback against like where the quarterback market has gone, and just pay him, pay him, pay him. You know what I mean? And so the three teams that I think have handled this in an interesting way, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it turns out, are Washington, Atlanta, and Tampa, where they each had non-first round young quarterbacks on their roster: Sam Howell in Washington, Desmond Ridder in Atlanta, and Kyle Trask in Tampa, who they like, but they're under no illusion that it's automatically their long-term starter. So they said, instead of going and chasing a Derek Carr, like, why don't we just find like a good option to compete with our young guy? We'll find out about our young guy. If he doesn't work out, we've got a guy who's starting experience, and then we'll go and spend that extra $30-35 million that we would have had to spend on Derek Carr or Daniel Jones elsewhere, right? So they go, and Washington goes and gets Jacoby Brissett, Tampa gets Baker Mayfield, Atlanta gets Taylor Heineke. All those guys have like a lot of starting experience. And that way you're also keeping yourself, like, you're staying loose. So like, you're not married to anything. And next year you've got all kinds of flexibility, if you're bad, to go get Caleb Williams and Drake May. I think it's a really interesting way of approaching that position, because, you know, again, for like the last 10 years, it's almost been like teams have been afraid to do that. You know what I mean, Connor? Like, yeah. Where it's like it's not so much, it's like, if you're Miami 5 years ago and you have Ryan Tannehill, why do you give him the contract? You give him that contract because it's like, well, yeah, if we don't, then what? You know, and Tennessee right. was the same thing with Tannehill. I'm not picking on Ryan, but, you know, I do think that there's that element of it, like, where teams are like, wow, you know, like, he's not Andrew Luck or he's not Patrick Mahomes, but if we don't give him the money, then what? You know, I think you're finally seeing some teams push back and approach the quarterback position a little bit differently, and it'll be interesting to see how it works out for those three teams.
And if you don't give them the money, you know, I'd be interested to see kind of the breakdown of, like, how much worse is, you know, Desmond Ridder / Taylor Heineke going to be than Derek Carr this year,
right?
From a production standpoint. I'd be very interested to put their numbers together over the course of 17 games and say, okay, how much worse? Because Derek Carr, you're in on him for 3 years and $100 million. Guy's been to one playoff game in his entire career, completed 53% of his passes in that one playoff game. You know, it's not like, you know, I like Derek Carr. I think
he's had good offensive coaches too. I know John Gruden and Josh McDaniels have been punching bags, but those guys do know how to coach quarterbacks, you know?
Hey, I mean, I came around on John Gruden. I wrote that John Gruden was a good offensive coach. It took me a little while.
Yeah, but it was a slow burn. You know what struck me too is, like, when I was thinking about this was, like, a year ago, if I had offered you Baker Mayfield or Daniel Jones, who would you have taken?
We've had a version of this conversation. I agree. I probably would have taken Baker Mayfield. Yeah.
Okay, but even if you would have, like, said, yeah, maybe Daniel Jones, you wouldn't have said he's $35 million better.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, so that's the thing. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's, like, where, again, like, teams, like, looking at these things analytically, it's sort of interesting that way.
For sure. So I'll hop around in the order a little bit, because I think it's interesting to you're going to the owners' meetings. I know you're going to hear a lot of this stuff next week. Lamar Jackson, kind of coming off of that QB value discussion, I would like to know, like, do we feel like there's any 2007 Philly sleeper teams here that are involved in this? Or is he going back to Baltimore and he's got to kind of build up from whatever whatever he had tweeted, what, 3 years, 133 million, fully guaranteed. Is that kind of where he's, where his options are at this point?
I mean, I've thought that the compromise is like a Kirk Cousins deal with bigger numbers, of course, but like structurally a Kirk Cousins deal. Cause like, I understand Lamar's point of view here. And I do think it's based on principle. If this was about the money, he would have just taken the money. Like, I think for him, it's more like, all right, you want me to do a traditional quarterback deal, which gives you injury protection 3 years from now. So you're asking me for injury protection after I put my body on the line for 5 years for you. Like, that doesn't make, like, and I can totally get that. If I'm like, I give credit for Lamar for standing on his principle on that. So I've thought like maybe the compromise here is to do a 3 year fully guaranteed deal with a no tag provision at the end of it. So he can be free if he's still in good shape and ready to roll and still a franchise quarterback at that point. And everybody sort of wins there. So I think that like the likelihood is that he and the Ravens work it out, whether it's on the tag or on a short-term, fully guaranteed deal. Like, I think that that's the likelihood. I wonder how many teams are laying in the weeds waiting for the draft. Because, you know, like, for those who don't know about the rules, once you get past the draft, they become 24 and 25 picks if you sign him to an offer sheet. So it'd be first-rounders next year and the year after that. If you're the Colts, like, and you are like the fourth pick in the draft is awfully rich to be putting in a trade like that, and you looked at it, you said, we're not wild about the quarterbacks, and the market for Lamar isn't all that hot right now. What if we tell Lamar, sit tight, we'll come and get you May 1st?
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I'm just picking the Colts out of the, you know, out of the group there, but there could be a couple teams there in the top 10 that, that look at it that way and say, you know what, we like the idea of going and getting him. We're going to go through the full evaluation with the draft eligible quarterbacks, and we're going to figure out if we love one of those guys. And if we don't, well, then on the other side of the draft, like the cost for bringing Lamar in goes down. So I just think that that's sort of, to me, like the draft is sort of like the draft day sort of creates, I think, a potential turning point here if he doesn't wind up going back to Baltimore.
And it's smart too, because we have four, potentially five high caliber quarterbacks in this draft, right? And anything can happen. Things can get weird. And so if you're the Colts, you just let it play out. I had thought that Indianapolis would have made a move for one of the top two picks before this, but I mean, they've been so stuck to their principles. They value
my understanding that draft was capital. My understanding is like that they did talk to Chicago on it, but they wanted to go through like the full process with the quarterbacks. So that tells me maybe they're not sold on these guys yet. You know, if they weren't willing to be as aggressive as Carolina was, like that tells me they're not as sold on the group as the Panthers are.
What do you think? What do you think Carolina's going to do?
I think it's probably C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. Like, I think I'd heard like that Bryce Young was sort of the guy, and I heard the owner really liked C.J. Stroud. This was a few weeks ago, and like the one thing that like definitively that I like was able to kind of ascertain is there's a couple of guys they have conviction on. And I think they're going to work through the process with all four of them. So, like, say, like, there's two guys that they have conviction on right now. It's like, okay, like, we're going to go to pro day, do the 30 visit, do the private workout, do the dinners, do all that different stuff with all four of them. And we're going to see if another one or two creep into that top group for us, at which point maybe we would consider moving down a spot or two. Yeah. Now, like, they'd need to have a team wanting to come up, and you know, there's no guarantee of that. Houston had talked to them about it. I don't think Houston was kind of back and forth on it a little bit. I think Arizona's in a tremendous spot right now to trade down. Like, if you look at where the Cardinals are, the Cardinals should be able to auction that pick as long as there's a team that really wants one of these guys. Because, I mean, if you're looking at it and you're, you know, on the outside of the top four, you have to prepare for the eventuality that all the guys could be gone by the fifth pick. So that puts the Arizona Cardinals, the one team in the top four that doesn't need one, in a great spot to trade that pick. So, you know, I think the Panthers are sort of trying to keep their options open right now. I think chances are they stick at one and take Young or Stroud, but like my feeling would be that they are going to give Richardson and Levis a chance. And, you know, whether or not like one of the, whether or not one of those guys jumps up into the top group for them, you know, what the information they have is on Houston, maybe they could move down a spot or two.
I, one funny prediction that I heard from just someone who is observing it, but kind of connected, kind of not connected to the process, was whoever they pick is going to be the opposite of the guy they wanted when they traded for the number one pick, because that's how the NFL goes, right? Yeah. You trade up and you're like, I want this guy. And then throughout the process, you talk yourself into someone else, because that's inevitably like, that's human nature, right? Human instinct. But I'll be interested to see that. You are going to owners meetings. I have two questions for you. Yeah. The first is Roger Goodell speaking about big money extensions. I'm guessing that his contract, the new one, is going to be fully guaranteed. He won't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have to worry about them cutting him in 2025. You know, yeah, man. Like, I think, like, to me, it's interesting, like, hearing all the pushback on this. And like, I know he's not popular with the public, but I think to understand this, you have to crawl under the heads of these billionaires. And I think the history of the NFL tells us that commissioners have almost always been hired for a specific reason, right? Like, so like Pete Rozelle was hired in the 60s because the NFL needed promotion, right? So they brought in a PR guy who was sort of a carnival barker who could help build the league up and make the league more popular, right? In the 80s, there were two strikes. So they hired a lawyer. They hired Paul Tagliabue, who's, you know, his background was in labor law. And it gave them almost two decades of labor peace. Then in, you know, 20 years after, nearly 20 years after that, the group of owners had changed, right? Like where you had more of these like big money sharks in the tank. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And the newest owners were uber wealthy. And that, like the changing face of the owners made it so, and the NFL became more focused, not that they weren't always worried about this, but more focused on revenues. And so they wanted to bring in a guy whose specialty was generating revenue. And that's what Roger Goodell was when he was the league's COO. So if that's what they hired him to do, what sort of job would you say he's done, Connor?
Right. You know, and
I mean, that's the thing.
I can write until I'm blue in the face, which I have, that like they need someone who is they need someone who's more publicly engaging, who's, you know, I wrote this the year that he introduced the Black Quarterback Summit and sort of his plan and pipeline to fix some of the issues of diversity on the coaching ranks. And, you know, he was reading it off like they were numbers on a spreadsheet for like a coffee company. And I'm just like, you need to be passionate about this kind of stuff. You need to be a salesperson, and his background is not in sales. But at the end of the day, how many times do we come back and say, well, it really doesn't matter, right? Because he's making billions and billions of dollars. He's making rich people richer. And at the end of the day, that's how you stay in business, you know?
That's, I mean, like, and again, like, it's about what matters to the owners, because they're the ones making the decisions. And like, you look at all the ways that they've generated revenue since he took over: Thursday Night Football, London, two teams back in LA, expanded playoffs, expanded regular season, what the off season has become now, the combine. Like, they've created, I think there's this feeling that the NFL, like, based on the ratings, it was hard for them to grow up anymore, so they had to grow out and add inventory. And that's what Roger's done. And so, like, I think, like, what we're seeing is NFL owners are willing to excuse a lot of things in the name of the almighty dollar. And so I think that's also part of why, Connor, they've farmed a lot of, like, functions of his job out, right? Like, the people they've hired around him, like, they keep hiring people to do things that may have been part of the commissioner's job 20 years ago. Why? Well, because they know what he's really good at. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, I mean, I think this is affirmation that the league and the owners that run the league are happy with, like, their level of growth and are happy with what he's done specifically in what they were looking for him to do in the job. And, yeah, so I think anybody who is surprised by this isn't paying attention to what the owners really want and how the NFL is doing in that category. And the answer is they're doing really well in that category.
I am always surprised, though, right? Like, it's one of those things where, like, you think about Girl Scouts, right? And all Girl Scouts are good salespeople because they're selling Girl Scout cookies, and people yep. love Girl Scout cookies, right? And Roger Goodell has, like, Girl Scout cookies loaded with, like, cocaine, like the most addictive product in the world that you could feed somebody. And so I'm always interested that, like, one of these business-minded owners isn't like, yeah, like, Roger's making a lot of money, but, like, what if we poached some business guru? You know what I'm saying? Like Roger Goodell is a good businessman, but is he one of the top five businessmen in America?
Right.
And you know that any of those guys would jump at the chance to run the NFL, you know?
You know what the inflection point was for me? Was the ref lockout. Because the ref lockout for me was like, the games looked like a clown show. Like, yep. there was, like, some real – I mean, and that was, like, purely greed, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was like a bunch of, like, just corporate raiders squeezing people for money.
Yeah.
And squeezing people for money that was, like, to them, non-consequential, right? And it was all about making a point. And for 5 weeks, like, I think it was 5 weeks, right? It was something like that. Like, how are we going to look back on that in 20 years? Like – It was horrible. Like, mm-hmm. it was really, really, really bad. Like, if that wasn't going to get people to change the channel, like, what is going to get them to change the channel? You know?
Yeah.
like you turned your games into a clown show, and, like, instead of, like, people changing the channel, like, people almost got more passionate about the NFL. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's also, like, I mean, there's built-in advantages that Roger has nothing to do with, which is, like, the built-in advantage of the sport is that, like, with America having less of an attention span, it demands way less of you than baseball or basketball or hockey. There's only 17 games for every team.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, the games are on the weekends. The games all feel like events because there's so few of them, and it's a perfect sport for gambling. You know, it's a perfect sport for fantasy. It's just, I mean, for our generation, the generation below us, like, it's the perfect sport, you know, in so many different ways that really have nothing to do with Roger. So he's a great businessman, I think, in a lot of ways, but in other ways, he's definitely just the guy who's in the right place at the right time.
Speaking of questionable products, the Washington Commanders may or may not be nearing a sale. I'm guessing people are going to be talking about that at the owners' meetings. Are you out on the Commanders? Are you still in? I'm still interested in buying the Commanders, but I just don't think I haven't gotten anybody to return my calls.
Well, actually, like, after we get off, here, I got another Zoom with my investment group that you know. We're going to talk it over. The price might have gotten a little out of control. No, I don't think this happens next week. I think this probably happens. At least the formalization of it, where they get approved by the finance committee and everything in May. No, I think the group that's gotten the most attention is Josh Harris's group. He's an investment guy. He has put together, he's got roots in DC, went to high school in DC, is from, you know, Chevy Chase, Maryland, which is a suburb of DC. And, you know, he was one of the finalists for the Broncos. So I think the NFL really likes him. He's put a group of, like, a star studded group around him. Magic Johnson's in the group. There's a lot of guys that have DC connections. And I think this is going to be really, I think this should be really good for the league. Now we'll see, you know, I mean, who knows how a new owner is going to be, but like, I think that there's a lot of areas where the NFL feels like it was held back by Daniel Snyder, which I would agree with that. And, like, now does the RFK site open up? You know, can they go back into the district and build a new stadium in the district? Does that mean there's going to be Super Bowls in DC? Which, you know, I had one, like, high-level executive tell me that they felt like the same way, like, the LA Super Bowl sort of opened up a lot of opportunity in Hollywood for the NFL, like, the having a Super Bowl in DC would, you know, open up the same things politically for the NFL. So, and then, of course, like, you know, it's, you know, Connor, people, like, you're younger than me. I think you're old enough to remember when Washington was still, like, one of the, I mean, they weren't the Yankees, but not far off.
I was like 4 or 5, like in the, you know, depending on, you know, where you're at in the early 90s there. And then when I really came online as an NFL fan, they had Steve Spurrier as their head coach. So I think the decline had begun by the time that I started observing football.
That's depressing for me to hear. So yes. I won't say where I was when Spurrier took the job, but, but like, honestly, like I think like, it's amazing that it's been like a full generation now, you know, and, you know, people who are younger don't realize like that this was an iconic franchise. Like this was right there with the Steelers and the Packers as like one of those teams, Cowboys, like, and so I think that there's the idea that with a new owner and a more stable organization in general, that maybe they could get back there. And obviously, like, that's an important market in every sport. It's just, there are so many things that, like, I think the NFL is excited about doing with that franchise in DC with new ownership in place.
All right, that's Albert Breer. Be sure to follow him. He's going to be at the Biltmore trying to sneak in and get a night at one of America's nicest hotels. I mean,
I'll be like happy. I'd be happy just to come away with a gift bag if anybody from the league is listening.
Oh yeah, I mean, I need some new golf shoes. I've actually never had golf shoes, so maybe get some golf shoes. I definitely need some new running shoes. So if you know, if anyone there is listening, you know, I'll take it. But thank you.
It doesn't
you,
cost the NFL anything to hand us a couple gift bags, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean Nike's guess, taking care of it. Nike's picking up the freight on that.
Silly ethics that we have to abide by. all right. That's Albert Breer. Be sure to follow him this week and always and check out his work at SI.com. He's going to be providing tons of great stuff from the owners' meetings and beyond. I'm Connor Rohr. This is the MMQB podcast. We are produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Moravik is the emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit of the Los Angeles Rams is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.